Welcome to the world of Muscle Smoke and Mirrors, where it's all about muscle, health, history, training, nutrition, bodybuilding, and state of mind.
Hey, listener, you're back with episode 25 of the World of Muscle. I'm one of your hosts, Tamash, and on the other line, I have Randy.
Good morning, Tamash.
Hey, Randy. How's it going?
Good. Good. Waiting to do part two here.
Part two of supplements. Yes, that's what we're... Well, is it supplements or are we going to dig a little deeper with...
Protein powders. This is the biggest question I probably have ever received over the past years, is protein powders. And obviously, back 20 years ago, I sold them. I sold protein powders at one time. Most people are not aware of.
You did. I'm not aware of it. What did you sell?
Whey protein. I had ultra-filtrated whey protein from the California Cheese Company, where just about everybody gets theirs from.
And what made you not sell it anymore?
Just come to the realization that I didn't think it was good for people. I just didn't think it was a natural food. It was a fractionated food, and it was, I believe, over long term, a degenerative food, as we started talking about last week. Whey was very popular in the 90s, late, early 90s. Dan Duchesne helped. He didn't discover it by any means. I mean, the whey's been a part of the manufacturing food industry for a long, long time.
Has it been part of it as a powder for a long time?
Yes.
I'm sure our listeners know what whey is.
I'm sure they don't.
But, okay, well, I'm pretty sure they're familiar with the whey powder.
Some are. Yeah, they're familiar with this term whey, but I don't think they really know what it is.
Okay, so that's, yeah, let's go there.
I'm going by how many times people ask me. They don't even have a clue what whey protein really is, right?
Okay, so go for it. Like, just explain to us what that is.
Whey typically is the byproduct of, it's not a byproduct, well, it is of making cheese, because if you just take, I'll take raw milk, I'll put it in the oven. It's just the oven light on. I don't even turn the oven on. It's just to get a warm 70, 80, 85 degree environment.
Fahrenheit.
That's the story. Sorry for our, even though I'm Canadian, I still grew up on Fahrenheit until we switched back in the late 70s, early 80s to metric. And I still flip back and forth. But anyways, the cheese curd, the castanet protein will coagulate and separate out from the whey. And for example, if I use a gallon, which is 4 quarts, roughly 4 liters, I'll get probably 3 liters of liquid whey. And about a quarter of that will be the coagulated cheese curd, which is a castanet. And milk, cow's milk, is typically about 80% castanet protein, 20% whey. So even though I'm getting 3 liters of liquid whey, there's not very much whey protein in it. So they have to remove all that liquid, and they come up with drying process. They used to be very crude years back. And actually, they used to just dump it in the rivers and lakes, but they had to stop doing that because it tremendously interfered with the ecosystem of the water, disturbing the oxygen and killing the fish, right? We had
possibly contributed to global warming. Or sorry, what is it called? Climate change now.
Jeez, and our climate change. But so they had to stop doing that. But they realized, like, whey has a pretty good amino acid profile, right? So, but it was a matter of getting better procedures of drying it. They had cross flow microfiltration, ultra filtration, where they were getting the percentages up from 75% to 80% protein, and then they got an ion exchange. But now they're getting into a little bit of a chemical thing going there, and it's how much of the denaturing is going on. But they had to take the liquid to a powder, and anytime you take a liquid to a powder, there is processing. There's always heat. Even though, for all you people out there, even buying oils, and they're saying cold pressed or not exceeding temperatures, blah, blah, blah. Agnes von der Plantz, who is one of the raw food gurus out there, he was really anal about heat and any types of heat. He would go to these manufacturers, specifically the oils and stuff, and he'd bring his heat gun and say, let me see your procedure. And he said the temperatures were far exceeding what they were claiming. And I believe in the protein processing industry, the temperatures are probably still exceeding the temperatures that they claim. They usually always do. And how much denaturing occurs.
So this
occurs,
comes back to what you said about there is nobody overseeing what's going on. I mean, they're supposed to be governed, but they're not.
In the supplement, remember, a lot of this is coming from the food industry. Like the California Cheese Company, out in the West Coast, they supply a lot. They don't supply everybody, but they supply a good bulk of the whey protein powders and the Casnit. So they're not part of the supplement industry. They're part of the food industry. They have regulations in terms of QAQC that they have to follow for their procedures, but nobody's put – they don't care in the food industry. They don't care about heat. They pasteurize everything anyways, right? So – but in the supplement industry, a lot of people are looking for – even the people who aren't raw food eaters, they still want high-quality raw – like you're getting claims of whey protein made from raw milk, cold dry processing of raw milk. So there are people who do want as less denaturing as possible. Those people are going to try to say, well, we have as low as heat as possible. But when you get into the actual processing, the mechanical functioning of the equipment and the heat built up from the just equipment alone, it's hard to often control that heat. So you do get denaturing, but some people don't care. They just want the powder. They want their end product, right? The protein powder. So that's with whey.
What about the liquid itself? As you said, there's only like a small amount of it being protein. And the rest is just electrolyte. I mean, there's a lot of other things in there.
It's water. There's fat. And to get the powder, they need to remove as much of the lactose as possible because there's very little lactose left in the Casnit that's going to be made into cheese curd. There's still quite a bit of fat left in there, but there is some fat that comes in with the liquid whey. And there's a fair amount of lactose in there. They had to remove that in order to get the whey protein powder out of there because there's different there's alpha-lactobumin, there's beta-lactoglobulin, there's lactoferrins, there's a lot of different proteins in whey. For interesting, we'll get into later maybe with Real Blair with his claims of mother's milk and what I speculated as to what he was doing to make those claims. But people, back to your question, people always use whey for in their cooking, and some people, very few but not a lot, will drink the whey in its natural state. It's still fractionated, I'd say, away from its fullness of having the casein in there, but it still has a lot of its minerals in its natural state. It's not been heated, and the calcium primarily is still in the casein, but there it still has a lot of its natural synergistic cofactors there that come out of it when they dry in powder and get the lactose out and they get the fat out. You're losing more and more of the cofactors of that protein, right?
Exactly. And electrolytes.
Yeah, well, there's minerals, the certain minerals in their activity. And there. Yeah, it's all that, like I said, it's all the synergy. Like Tomas, I still call you Tomas. I don't call you Tomash. His company name is Primal Synergy. And there's a lot behind that name that probably most people don't understand, but it is in terms of synergy. You could probably do a better job explaining your name, but the synergistic factors, the diet primal is keeping things as natural and in their original state as possible. And the synergy of that diet and your body, everything is all about synergy. And in our society, we reduce everything out and try to isolate everything and try to learn everything as a component, and we lose track of the whole. I think your name is awesome for putting it all back together again, Primal Synergy.
Well, that's the whole thing with, as you said, that we take everything apart and then we put it back thinking it's better than it was when we took it apart.
Exactly.
The best example is yogurt. I mean, people are pushing the probiotic yogurt. Because first they pasteurize it, so they kill all the bacteria that's in it. Then they put other strains of bacteria back into the dead pasteurized yogurt. And now it's the latest and greatest thing. And everyone and their grandma should have probiotic yogurt because that's what keeps you healthy. Having the yogurt on its own as in its natural state that had the natural probiotics in it to begin with.
It's the same thing exactly as you're saying, but with the protein powders with whey and milk. For when whey came out, they found that it's quickly assimilated. When you drink milk itself, it'll separate and it'll curdle and separate, and the whey will probably come into your bloodstream quite quickly in the cast, and it'll take longer to come in. So when whey came out, they're promoting, hey, this is a great post-workout drink. It's into your bloodstream and in your muscles. You're feeding the muscles really fast. And then because the casein is too slow, then they're realizing, well, that whey kind of it come and goes pretty quick. You need a slower acting protein as well. So they're prescribing. I've listened to this. the recommend to take a whey protein for post, and then you can also take a slower acting casein protein. And it's like you start laughing. So why the hell don't you just take drinking the whole raw milk when it comes together with the package with the vitamin A, vitamin D, all the minerals all together, working together?
And on top of that, do they ask you to mix it with water, you know, just to cut down on the calories and the less fattening and blah, blah, blah. So the marketing has been brilliant because you and I both bought a hook, line, and sinker back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
Protein, oh, yeah, it gets absorbed way faster, except it doesn't get absorbed. It goes right through.
My biggest hook, line, and sinker came in the early 80s with when I was reading Sandy Shaw and Dirk Pearson's Life Extension, and they were the ones who kind of introduced L-arginine and L-ornithine to breach that blood-brain barrier and punch the pituitary gland to release growth hormone. We didn't realize Sandy, I think, was injecting it at the time, but all of it, they were saying, well, you got to take about 10 grams of this stuff. And I thought, oh, geez. And oh, my God. I remember I tried taking all this L-ornithine and arginine and ornithine. You could let a cigarette off my rear end.
Oh, my.
Oh, jeez. I found out later more people were doing the same stupid thing. But that was my bitter pill. After that point, I had a hard time buying in a lot of things. The protein powders, sure. I used those probably into the mid-90s, late 90s. But when Bill Phillips came along with a lot of his supplement claims, I wasn't really buying into it. Creatine took me a long time even before I tried it. HMB, all that stuff, because I still had that bitter pill and burning rear end memories of the L-arginine and ornithine cramming. But again, that's our supplement industry, right? This is gonna do the job. But
we've kind of covered whey. Do we want to cover milk and egg?
Yeah. Well, with whey, like I said, whey protein has been popular since the 90s onwards. Before that, it was full whole milk proteins, it was egg protein, and going way back to the early 50s, it was soy. Now, bodybuilding, Vince Gironda and Rio Blair warned against soy. When I came in and started reading bodybuilding nutrition in the 70s, I quickly was educated by Gironda to stay away. He called it shit, the soy protein. And in my teens, I wasn't going to argue. Okay, Vince knows and Rio know. So I stayed away from it. When soy made this huge industrial insurgence into our food supply, especially in the late 80s, I thought, well, maybe Vince and Blair were wrong. And I started.
It was a superfood at one point. Well, I guess to some people it still is.
Bob Hoffman thought it was a superfood back in the 50s, right? But we can talk a little bit more about why it's not a superfood.
And vegans and vegetarians swear by it as their protein source.
I cringe when I think of those guys eating all that stuff. They're going to harm themselves. But by the early 90s, I thought, okay, I'm going to look more into soy. I'm going to give it a fair shot. You know, I bought some. It tasted like crap still. But when you go and research soy, at that time, the only people I found that were promoting, obviously, where people were selling it and the people who manufactured it. Everybody else who was not selling it and said, do not take this protein. It is not a good protein. There's all sorts of issues with it. The kill shot for me on soy was the fact, I think they might have it now. I haven't looked, but it took them years and years and years to get GRAS status from the FDA that's generally recognized as safe. And the FDA, as corrupt as it is, can be bought off, in my opinion. But there was something going on with soy isolates that they could not get this GRAS status because of there's a lot of what's called anti-nutrients in soy. They have a lot of what are protein binders or mineral binders and inhibitors. I mean, mineral inhibitors, that they have to do a lot of processing to break these things down. And that's before we get into the actual the phytoestrogens, the issues with why the Weston A. Price Foundation, one of their mandates is to stop soy from formula for all the controversies surrounding.
I know, we can probably do a whole episode on soy.
Dr. Kayla Daniels wrote the Dark Side of Soy, America's Health. I forget the full title, but it's a big
soy story, I believe.
Yeah, The Dark Side of America's Health Food, Miracle Food or something like that. I read her book, and I think I quoted her in volume one. But so I immediately went away from soy. That's when I said I was selling whey protein in the 90s. And A lot of people are wondering what's better, milk and whole milk protein, milk and egg protein versus whey protein. My issue with egg protein is, in number one, oxidized cholesterol. If you're going to have whole milk protein, whole egg protein, and using the whole egg, you're going to have issues with the oxidized cholesterol, which is kind of a controversy. But there's a lot of people who just get egg white protein. I don't believe that's a very effective protein. Von der Planet's in the raw food industry. He didn't treat eggs as a muscle building protein food. He looked at eggs because an egg is kind of an embryonic, right? All the protein, the white egg white in there, exactly is food for the yolk. It actually becomes the chicken. Like, you look at an egg, like an egg's got all the nutrition and information in it to build an entire chicken. It's quite amazing. It's one of the only foods that doesn't have to be watered. Just has to keep kind of incubated in a warm area, and it's going to turn into a chicken. So you think there was some anabolic factors in there, but I think that comes with the whole egg, not the egg white. The whole egg has essential fats and a lot of the vitamin A has to be with the fats, a fat soluble vitamin.
And vitamin, you know, the A, vitamin, you get vitamin B and biotin, yeah, all that good, yeah, stuff.
Raw eggs, I'll leave that for another show, but raw eggs. But egg white, I never looked at as a top-notch protein. So, but a lot of the 70s and 80s protein, Beverly, I think they're doing milk and egg where they're blending them both together.
And that just to, I guess one of the reasons behind it, as far as I know anyway, is to fill out the protein profile.
Yeah, back in the 60s, there were also some gland-based animal meat proteins, like what was that? Nutrichol, Malabar, and Anaprol from Professional Foods. These are apparently, just according to Dave Draper, tasted like dirt right there. The taste was awful compared to, they started mixing in the castanet milk protein to try to improve the flavors of these. But it's interesting where Rio Blair really hung his hat on milk protein and egg protein for muscle building, where guys like Gonzalez von der Planet did not. He put more on animal muscle meat, muscle proteins basically being similar to muscle builds muscle. And those guys are totally different there, where Blair did not think muscle meat. Now, he couldn't sell muscle meat either. He could sell milk proteins. So
plus, he's come up with quite impressive results from using his protein.
Yes, he did. But let's go back. When I wrote in Volume 1 in the early 80s, in the 50s, when he did his transformations, and he did them. I talked with Ray Marcunas, who is, I don't know if Ray's still alive now, but he was there with Blair right from 1947. He saw the transformations. Ogenes and Blair have a similarity here. They both did similar things. When the first things Blair did, a.k.a. Irvin Johnson, when he was in Chicago, his name was still Irvin Johnson. I think he changed it in the late 50s, early 60s to Real H. Blair. But he would take them off weight training. At that time in the early 1950s, we didn't have hardly any obesity at all. We were coming off a depression and a world war, and a lot of people were very undernourished, underweight. He would take them off weights because he thought right away they're overstressing themselves and they're undernourished. And yeah, he gave them his soy protein at the time, but he made them mix it with two quarts of milk and a lot of eggs and meat, and he fed them, and they grew like crazy and recovered, right? I asked how much was the soy powder that was highly processed at the time is highly questionable. He dumped soy early when he hooked up with the Wander Company in Villa Park in Illinois there, where they were making Ovaltine, but they also made products for the medical industry. One was OptiPro, and that became, it was a milk and egg, and they were using some low temperature procedures for one of the proteins in that protein product, and that became as Blair's Protein 60. And Blair, other guys like John Bailick of Iron Man Magazine, and Ray Marcunas, and Chuck Renslow, who bought Blair's gym from him when Blair moved out to the West Coast. Blair somehow acquired the formula from the Wander Company and was able to cut those other guys out because they were still buying the protein directly from the Wander Company. But Blair eventually got them cut off. And we're talking about Blair's claims about mother's milk, where with his protein powder, somewhere around about 1966, Blair made this claim that his protein is close to the biological value, close to mother's milk. And I noticed at that time is when he added lactobumin to his milk and egg. Now, with mother's milk is, like as I mentioned earlier, cow's milk is 80% casein and 20% whey. Human milk protein is quite a bit higher in whey and lower in casein. And the difference also being that cow's milk, the whey in cow's milk has alpha-lactalbumin and beta-lactoglobulin. Human milk whey only has alpha-lactalbumin. It does not have beta-lactoglobulin. They both have lactoferrins and other little smaller proteins. But for Blair, if he would have just added lactalbumin to it, he could claim that it has more of a balance of lactobumin to casein of mother's milk than, say, cow's milk. So that's what I was speculating he was looking at and making that claim. But he wasn't the first to use lactobumin, because Perry Rader had mostly lactobumin protein in the late 50s and early 1960s until the FDA cracked down on a lot of the supplement industry. And the Raders didn't want to jump all through the hoops financially, and they just retired their protein product. But later on in the 70s, Blair was he had a number of different products. And again, I speculate that he may have got a hold of colostrum. Mm-hmm. And because Don said there was something different about his powder, even the color of it, where he wasn't actually, he was more yellow and stuff, that he may have been adding colostrum at that time. But
Which again is another whole show, because colostrum is just, that's the first thing that comes out of a cow's udder after giving birth to nourish the little calf.
Good point. That's right. Most people aren't sure what colostrum is. It's the first milking. It's called the first milking. And it has a lot of growth factors, immunofactors that the young cows, and in mother's milk too, that we need to establish us early. That's why one of the reasons why breast milk and breastfeeding is so important. But anyways, the bottom line for...
One quick fact, and I'm not 100% sure I'm correct on it, but a calf doubles its weight within a few days, a week, because of the colostrum, or probably attributed mostly to the colostrum that it has.
Yeah, we can check with Steve or Michael Schmidt, because they're doing this all the time. Yeah. And in one of our raw food shows, we'll talk about what Michael Schmidt did with a calf, where he pasteurized the milk and left the other one raw, and then what happened there. But what we're talking about, to sum up on this protein powder, is that Blair didn't know when he gave the powders to, come on, guys, put in raw cream, raw milk, raw eggs. He tried to reconstitute that powder that had become stripped of many things. And again, they are fractionated foods. They are processed. And long-term, I truly believe it creates a degenerative process, because the body has to supply those missing synergies from its own resources and tissues, and eventually it'll wear you down. Go with the real food as much as you can.
Okay. So the question that we get asked is whether whey protein powder is better, or milk and egg protein powder is better. And
I said, don't use any.
And the answer is just have the milk and have the egg in its raw form altogether.
Yeah, or low, you know, high, best quality you can get, or best, the closest to nature that you can tolerate it. Okay, do that. You can never fail. You can never fail. I threw it out. I used to sell the stuff. I could have made a lot of money. I could make a ton of money right now if I wanted to get into that supplement business, into the protein powder business, right? I still haven't closed the door on all supplements, but protein powders, when I'm eating raw meat, you know, raw eggs, raw milk, there's no way anybody's going to convince me that this powder, now either rice powder, protein powder, pea protein powder, is superior, hemp is superior. There's no way. There's no way. And I said, if we get the studies to bring some subjects through gestation periods, and we'll plow them through all this with this powder, and let's see what happens to them. But
you can go for the studies, or you can go with common sense, mm-hmm. Right? Everything is in the real food. The raw food has all the coenzymes we don't even know about yet.
No. And we'll talk, like I said, we'll do more shows on raw food eating.
Awesome. I think we covered what we wanted to cover. And listener, if you have any questions that we didn't cover, or if you want us to clarify something, please let us know in the comments below. And speaking of comments, we had a valid comment after the last show. Dr. Richard Reich says, I enjoyed the podcast and Randy's books. However, the comments on physicians are no longer true. Many, most in my experience, are very oriented towards prescribing preventative care with proper diet and exercise, rather than drugs in the old mode. I am a medical doctor. And we wanted to address this. I think, Randy, you had a few things to say, and acknowledge that it is likely true that a lot of I would call them maverick doctors who do want to prevent, because they, I'm sure they see the same thing over and over, and if, and they know that if they only changed a few things, they wouldn't have to come back with the same symptoms over and over. Now, I think I can't remember the exact things we said or what we mentioned was against the medical industry rather than doctors themselves.
Well, if I look at what Richard said is true. When you look back in the late 50s and early 60s, when exercise was considered for buffoons, it's going to make you muscle bound, muscle binding, they called it. They were still connected with the tobacco industry. They chastised Bob Hoffman for warning to stay away from cigarette smoking. Dr. Ian McDonald, Dr. Harvey, two prominent AMA officials promoting cigarette smoking in their journal, right? So from that point to now, yes, they're starting from the 1980s. Exercise was starting to be recognized as number one, very effective instead of being detrimental.
Exercise probably in the form of aerobic exercise, yeah. Running.
Most doctors today will say, yes, do some exercise. But when it comes to diet, in my experience, there is still a whole level of ignorance because there's still not that much education. I can give a few examples with clients that I have that I got. Their doctors wanted to put them on statin drugs because of the cholesterol levels. I'll give you my two, and my Mike Petrella's a buddy trainer in St. George, and one of his clients. Both of them, all three of them, the doctors wanted to put them on statin drugs at a very young age. At the time, 40 and below, and one time 30 and below in age group. And two of them, I got to change their diet. One was doing a lot of cream. This guy's an attorney, right? A lot of cream, a lot of fat, a lot of eggs and meat. And he went back, and the other fellow, Scotty, he didn't want to necessarily do the raw milk, but he added a lot of fatty meat, a lot of eggs. Both these guys had a tremendous drop in their cholesterol levels. Where the doctors were, I give them credit. They said, you know, guys, your numbers have changed. I'm not going to argue with it. But the one doctor even said to Scotty, he goes, you guys know way more about nutrition than we do. These were his words, right? The other, and both the doctors were good enough to say, keep doing what you're doing because your numbers are lower. Mike Petrella's client, the doctor freaked on the kid. He said, when he told him what he was eating, because this kid was doing the raw milk and the raw cream and the raw eggs, and he just went and tore him a new sphincter. And he actually gave him the Canadian Health Guide, right, the diet guide, which is ridiculous, and said, follow this. You know, you can't be eating like that. Just totally ignoring the fact that the numbers had dropped significantly, and he did not have to go on these statin drugs. So one of my best friends' brother is a physician, and he told him outright, diet doesn't mean anything in this situation. He said it does nothing for anything. He has no respect for diet whatsoever. My physician, who's a trainer, he does. He was trained in Ireland, and he respects nutrition, and he'll read about nutrition, and he's an athlete himself, and he takes nutrition seriously. Dr. Mauro Di Pasquale, obviously a physician who takes nutrition seriously, but he learned it on his own. Out in the West Coast, in Canada here, they are opening up more to alternative procedures, but I still see a lot of ignorance when it comes to diet because they're still pushing the statin drugs, even though the evidence has come out dramatically that cholesterol is becoming non-issue. But a lot of doctors are still pushing it. So that what Richard says is true and not true. There is a movement, but there's still some old fort hanging on to, you know, certain things. That exercise has been pretty much accepted, but the diet argument is still out there. They're still kicking and screaming about saturated fats when it's known that it's a fact these things are not detrimental. But, you know, stay away from this stuff. Stay away with not take this drugs. And look, we're still a culture that takes vaccines for everyone. That's still their primary emphasis from the pharmaceutical company is the prevention is vaccines for everything now, and which is
That's another episode there.
500 shows, you know, with the vaccine issue. But the point is, I respect what he says and I acknowledge a level of truth, but we still have a long way to go there.
Yes, exactly. Any news and updates that you want to cover?
Tomash and I, we put out a little email, and I spent the last, since Thursday night to this morning, responding to the I can't believe how many people responded. And the responses are great. And there's some, obviously there's great acknowledgement and stuff. We get splits of people who really like the book, but some like the smaller format, some still like the larger format and stuff. But I like the fact when people open up, some people open up and they start telling me their stories. And I can't necessarily use it all in what I write, because you just can't cover everything, right? But it really it broadens my perspective and context of the thing. I find these things fascinating. So a lot of people, some of the emails were like, oh, I didn't know if I wanted to email you, but I wasn't sure if I didn't want to bother you. Bother me. You're not bothering me. Like, I mean, email me. I would recommend to email me directly as opposed the Facebook post. I will get them, but I can't respond to them unless I have to go through Tomas to do a post. If my email's there, use it directly. I will always answer. I'll always read your stories and ideas. And I can't say that I will use them all. But I'll think, wow, you know what? I forgot about that, or I didn't even know that or realize that. And it really expands the context of the whole story and gives me ideas. But I appreciate how many people actually responded back from that email.
And it is predominantly positive.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was great. A lot of the guys were great in allowing us to use something for what the readers are saying. We're going to put some of their comments in there.
And you can read that at the musclesmokeandmirrors.com/reader-comments, all one word.
Is there a place to get that on there from my website at all?
Yeah, I'll add the link to the menu bar.
All right.
Oh, and if you yourself have comments, please feel free to add them, or reviews that you want to add them to the book on the website. Right underneath, there's a way to write a review.
I'm also, can we add one more? I'm writing an article. I'm taking a little break and writing an article for Muscle Sport Magazine, Joe Paitero's Muscle Sport Magazine, on the recent lawsuit. It's going to be called Muscle Monopolies. And a quick update again, 4 people were served subpoenas at the recent Arnold Classic. That was Jim Mannion, Steve Weinberger, Sandy Rinaldi, and Rafael Santanja of the IFBB were all served subpoenas for an antitrust suit. And a lot of people are saying, well, you know, it took so long or whatever. But I'm just going to go back and show how the monopolies have kind of transpired over the years. So hopefully that article will be out in the next month or so with Muscle Sport Mag, and we'll be allowed to post it also.
Thanks, Randy.
Okay, bye.
Thank you for listening to the World of Muscle, Smoke, and Mirrors. We hope you've enjoyed the content of this episode, and we're looking forward to sharing more next time.